Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Unconstitutional Vagueness and Retroactivity Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 18, 2016, the Supreme Court decided Welch v. United States. Gregory Welch pleaded guilty to the charge of being a felon in possession of a firearm in violation of federal law. Because Welch had three prior felony convictions, the district court determined that the Armed Career Criminal Act required that he be sentenced to a minimum of 15 years in prison. Welch appealed, arguing that his conviction for robbery in Florida state court did not qualify as a predicate offense for the purposes of ACCA, because at the time he was convicted, Florida state law allowed for a robbery conviction with a lower level of force than the federal law required to qualify as a predicate offense. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit, however, affirmed the district court's judgment, concluding that the minimum elements for conviction under the Florida law established a serious risk of physical injury to another, and therefore qualified it as a predicate offense for purposes of ACCA. Welch's subsequent attempt to obtain habeas relief from the district court was denied, and the 11th Circuit rejected his appeal, but the Supreme Court granted certiorari. The two questions before the Supreme Court are: 1. Whether Johnson v. United States, which held that the residual clause in the Armed Career Criminal Act of 1984 is unconstitutionally vague, announced a new substantive rule of constitutional law that is retroactively applicable in an initial motion to vacate a federal prisoner's ACCA-enhanced sentence under 28 U.S.C. 2255A, and 2. Whether petitioner's conviction for robbery under Florida state law qualifies as a violent felony that supports a sentence enhancement under the ACCA. By a vote of 7-1, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the 11th Circuit and remanded the case. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court, holding that Johnson announced a new substantive rule that has retroactive effect in cases on collateral review, including Welch's. The Supreme Court declined to address, however, whether Welch's conviction for robbery under Florida law qualified as a predicate for purposes of the ACCA enhancement, leaving the matter for the Court of Appeals on remand. Justice Kennedy's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Alito, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed the dissenting opinion. To discuss the case, we have Richard E. Myers II, who is the Henry Brandis Distinguished Professor of Law, University of North Carolina School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Myers.
On Monday, April 19, 2016, less than 3 weeks after the case was argued, the Supreme Court handed down its opinion in Welch v. United States and held that last year's decision in Johnson v. United States, striking down portions of the Armed Career Criminal Act as unconstitutionally vague, would apply retroactively, making relief available to defendants whose cases were final before Johnson was decided. The Welch case will have ramifications far beyond the named defendant's case if it turned out that the court is truly redefining its retroactivity jurisprudence. To understand Welch, we first need to understand a little bit about Johnson, the case that changed the underlying law. Last June, the court ruled that a defendant may not have his sentence increased from 10 years or less in prison to at least 15 years under the residual clause of the Armed Career Criminal Act because that clause was unconstitutionally vague. The Armed Career Criminal Act increases the sentences for certain felonies if the actor has a history of violent crime, from a statutory maximum of 10 years to a mandatory minimum of 15 years, with as much as a life sentence available. Under the relevant provisions of Title 18 United States Code Section 924E, any person who has three previous convictions for a violent felony or a serious drug offense, or both, committed on occasions different from one another, shall be fined and imprisoned not less than 15 years. At issue in Johnson was the meaning of violent felony. Under the statute, there are three ways a crime becomes a violent felony. First, it is named in the statute. Second, it meets a test that requires its elements to include the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force against the person of another. Or third, and important for our purposes, it qualifies under the so-called residual clause because it, quote, otherwise involves conduct that presents a serious potential risk of physical injury to another, close quote. Johnson, one of the last opinions written by the late Justice Scalia, held that the residual clause was unconstitutionally vague because it did not provide courts with sufficient guidance to fairly apply the statute. It was clear that the residual clause enhancement could not be enforced going forward. Petitioner Welch, who had been sentenced before Johnson was decided, raised the question of whether the new rule was retroactive and therefore could be challenged on appeal in successive petitions for a writ of habeas corpus. Retroactivity review on appeal has been at best complicated and difficult to parse under the court's existing precedent. The Welch decision turns on whether the new rule was substantive or procedural. As a general matter, procedural rules are not retroactive, but substantive rules are. According to the opinion, Petitioner Gregory Welch is one of the many offenders sentenced under the Armed Career Criminal Act before Johnson was decided. Welch pleaded guilty in 2010 to one count of being a felon in possession of a firearm. The probation office prepared a pre-sentence report finding that Welch had three prior violent felony convictions, including a Florida conviction for a February 1996 strong-arm robbery. The relevant Florida statute prohibits taking property from the person or custody of another with the use of force, violence, assault, or putting in fear. The charging document from the 1996 Florida case tracked that statutory language. The 2010 federal pre-sentence report provides more detail. It states that, according to the robbery victim, Welch punched the victim in the mouth and grabbed a gold bracelet from his wrist, while another attacker grabbed a gold chain from his neck. The district court ruled that the Florida offense of strong-arm robbery qualified as a violent felony both under the elements clause and the residual clause. The district court proceeded to sentence Welch to the act's mandatory minimum sentence of 15 years in prison. Because the residual clause has been ruled unconstitutionally vague, Welch's counsel, and unusually counsel for the United States, argued that the decision was retroactive under the principles laid out in the court's Teague v. Lane line of cases. In the precedent most applicable here, the court cited its 2004 decision in Schriero v. Summerlin that substantive rules apply retroactively, and defining a rule as substantive if it alters the range of conduct or the class of persons that the law punishes. This includes decisions that narrow the scope of a criminal statute by interpreting its terms, as well as constitutional determinations that place particular conduct or persons covered by the statute beyond the state's power to punish. Under this framework, the rule announced in Johnson is substantive. By striking down the residual clause as void for vagueness, Johnson changed the substantive reach of the Armed Career Criminal Act, altering the range of conduct or the class of persons that the act punishes. Before Johnson, the act applied to any person who possessed a firearm after three violent felony convictions, even if one or more of those convictions fell only under the residual clause. An offender in that situation faced 15 years to life in prison. After Johnson, the same person engaging in the same conduct is no longer subject to the act and faces at most 10 years in prison. The residual clause is invalid under Johnson, so it can no longer mandate or authorize any sentence. Johnson establishes, in other words, that even the use of impeccable fact-finding procedures could not legitimate a sentence based on that clause. It follows that Johnson is a substantive decision. The opinion rejected the argument that the analysis should focus on the nature of the underlying constitutional claim, which in this case was void for vagueness, which is properly understood as procedural. According to the opinion, neither Teague nor its progeny support that approach. This court has determined whether a new rule is substantive or procedural by considering the function of the rule, not its underlying constitutional source. That is for good reason. The Teague framework creates a balance between, first, the need for finality in criminal cases, and second, the countervailing imperative to ensure that criminal punishment is imposed only when authorized by law. That balance turns on the function of the rule at issue, not the constitutional guarantee from which the rule derives. A little further on, the court went on to say, it depends instead on whether the new rule itself has a procedural function or a substantive function. That is, whether it alters only the procedures used to obtain the conviction or alters instead the range of conduct or class of person that the law punishes. So what does this mean? The seemingly simple rule after Welch is that watershed cases of criminal procedure will be retroactively applicable, as will all cases where the primary conduct has been found not to have been properly criminalized by a statute, either as a result of constitutional decision protecting primary conduct or as the result of a narrowing construction. Welch may open the doors for a significant new range of habeas cases. However, it may not be quite so broad. Justice Kennedy noted that both sides assumed that the Teague framework properly applied to this case, and the court did not engage in an extensive analysis. Principles of federalism and comity may reemerge as the lower courts decide whether to extend the reasoning in Welch to cases involving state law. Justice Thomas, the lone dissenter, argued that the court had expanded retroactivity beyond any previously recognized bounds. A case called Bowsley, he claimed, extended retroactive... Let me restart that sentence. A case called Bowsley, he claimed, extended retroactive relief for federal prisoners raising statutory claims, not just constitutional ones. Another case, Montgomery, extended Teague to state post-conviction proceedings, enshrined Teague as a constitutional command, and redefined substantive rules to include rules that require sentencers to follow certain procedures in punishing juveniles. Now, the majority collapses Teague's substantive procedural distinction further, allowing any rule that has the incidental effect of invalidating substantive provisions of a criminal statute to become a substantive rule. If Justice Thomas is correct, the effect on cases deemed final in state courts may be significant. Arguments based on a combination of the principles stated in Johnson and Welch involving statutes other than the Armed Career Criminal Act are surely wending their way to the courts as this is being recorded. I leave it to the listener to parse for themselves the more arcane portions of the opinion regarding the case's unusual procedural posture and technical concerns regarding the issues of certificates of appealability.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.